My name is Mary Mintz. I am a nurse by training, and I work with a great team of people at the Bixby Center. I was asked to say a little bit about myself, and to that end, one of the things I wanted to mention is I've been a nurse for over 30 years, most recently been very involved in quality measures and improving efforts at the healthcare provider level in affecting the quality of care that's delivered on a daily basis. So, with that, I have no relationships to disclose. The talk this morning is about the reliability of a visit date selection algorithm that I helped develop so that we could look at claims data and make some judgments about the quality of care that was delivered and try to develop some interventions that would be meaningful in the provider offices that we work with in the Family PAC program, not the least of which is very targeted information to help people understand and recognize missed opportunities to retest their chlamydia patients. Oops, wrong button, sorry. Okay. So, while using administrative data is cheaper than a site visit, is it a reliable way to know what actually happened at that visit? So our burning question is, can we trust the claims to tell us what is being done during that office visit? Family PACT, for those of you who are not from California, is a publicly funded program that serves low-income Californians with family planning and related services and has been in place serving people since 1997. In 2009, which is the year from which the data I've used in this presentation comes, we served approximately 1.82 million Californians. Medical record review is one of several evaluation efforts that our team does to assess the quality of care delivered by the providers that participate in that program to those clients that are enrolled in Family PACT and at a Family PACT visit. The 2011 medical record review, we visited 215 sites. We abstracted over 5,000 visit records altogether. We used 7 sample groups to look at various components of the quality of care. And toward that end, we needed to be sure that we were looking at dates of service that were likely to have been a face-to-face encounter that generate a medical record for my abstractors to review at all. So an algorithm was used to select those visit dates, and now after that information has all been collected, we're going about a comparison of the claims that would be associated with those records to compare the abstracted information to those claims and assess the utility of claims in judging quality as we go forward. These comparisons not only allow us to validate the reliability of our code list to find the face-to-face encounters, it also, we can confirm that claim coding accurately reflected the content of that visit and the accuracy of client inclusion in each of our four female subsamples around implanon, IUCs, being chlamydia positive, or just our general sample. And we wanted to ensure in the future that a selected visit date will result in a recording that actually mentions a targeted event of interest, such as the chlamydia testing event. So this visit algorithm started with 78 standardized procedure codes, ICD-9 codes, and CPT codes, CPT-4 codes that people would use to file claims. We considered only paid claims. We excluded some of the lower-level codes that are associated with administrative activities purely in our Family PAC program. We also excluded claims that would have come from another provider, not the clinic site where the client was seen. And we do have to rely on accurate billing by the provider to correctly represent a clinic encounter in this whole visit algorithm. One of those groups that we looked at was our chlamydia positive sample, and the visit algorithm had to go a step further To identify our chlamydia positive sample, we expanded the use of that visit algorithm both to locate visits but also to confirm that we are finding that event of interest and an appropriate follow-up visit. The chlamydia positive sample for us started out at a fairly high level with the over 300,000 women that were seen at the 215 sites that we'd already selected for this particular program project. We then sent that list down to the California CDC, and they did a match, a probable likely match process, to tell us which of those 321,000 women were likely reported as a positive chlamydia case in 2009. Sent back about 5,800 women identified, flagged as 98% probable match to someone in our chlamydia registry in the 18 counties which you're going to go to, and served, and now we know that they were probably served by one of those 215 providers, since that's the list we started with. We then went through and looked for visits with those providers around their positivity date and came up with a final sample of about 3,780 women, from which we then randomly selected 395. That visit algorithm date was important in both identifying their provider and identifying the dates that we were then going to go look at. So our first finding was that of the initial pool, physicians and clinics were actually able to locate records for 379. We were in the field in 2011. That's not too bad for a two-year lag of finding a record. Only 44 of those 379 did not have a positive chlamydia result in 2009. That suggests about an 88% reliability of our registry matching process. The clinic records and visits with documentation of a positive chlamydia test result were found for 335, two of whom we then had to exclude later from the rest of this analysis because their positivity was actually in the last week and a half of December of 2008. So they're just excluded here. But we did find that positive test, and it said something probably more about our registry matching really than the visit algorithm. We did ask additional questions about the chlamydia positive sample, and this is where the visit algorithm again comes into play, because we wanted to try to address some other issues with chlamydia positive women. We identified visits at the beginning, around their positivity date, trying to pick up the date that they were screened as well as the date that they were treated, and then looked in their records up to 180 days later for a follow-up test, a visit in the office so we could see if they were retested, and if so, if not, what else happened at that visit? Can we identify events where we can make very targeted, instructive interventions available to help people appreciate how to not miss those opportunities in the future? Toward this end, we did want to make sure that if we were identifying procedures at the subsequent visit, not only was it associated with timely testing, but were they actually opportunities to collect a convenient specimen? To address these, we needed to know that the claims accurately reflect the testing ordered and done, that certain claims would reliably indicate a convenient specimen collection opportunity, and that certain combinations of claims may be less reliable indicators of testing opportunities for females, at least in terms of the interventions that we might be able to get in place out there. Okay, I talked about this already a little bit. Let's skip forward. Claims and abstraction data were now in these two databases. So to do these comparisons, we grouped the procedure codes according to some common groupings that we had used in developing the visit algorithm. Office visits, a procedure related to initiating a particular contraceptive method, a known STI treatment procedure that's coded that way, or some sort of diagnostic test in the office. Cervical abnormality assessment, that's called a pap smear in ancient history. Complication management, anything that would be managing a complication of a particular treatment or something else that's related to contraceptive services. And then we also looked at the claims data and our abstraction data and identified those elements of the abstraction that we collected and the claims that we now have from these other provider sources, such as chlamydia testing, urine testing, pathology reports from other kinds of labs, specimen collection opportunities that are reflected in that in-house procedure during the clinic visit, and which of those tests actually indicate a pelvic exam, because the office intervention, if you know a pelvic exam has taken place, might be a little different than the one for a urine test. So, our findings. We did find evidence of specimen opportunities, both in the clinic record and in the claims information. And in reading this, there are two bars for each one. There's an initial visit and the follow-up visit. We started out with 335 people, women, with an initial visit where they were either diagnosed and treated or treated or both. And then only 65 where we were actually able to find a follow-up visit in the next 180 days. I know that the CDC recommends going out to a year at the next time you see them, but because of that optimum of 3-month window, we doubled it and went to 6 months. Then we also looked at the claims information, knowing now what we knew about the claims and being able to compare for the same people. If you look at our data, it suggests that using claims actually underreports the opportunities that were at those visits, at least, especially the second visit, to collect a specimen. So in our population of 335, this shows them in terms of, did they have one visit or two visits, and did they get retested or not? And as it turns out, 39% were retested within 6 months of their initial positive test. That's 129 women. Only 105 of those, only had the one visit. Somehow, without return visit, they got retested within that window. What's sad is those that had two visits and were not retested, that 41 down below. The 63% of those who were seen for something in the next 6 months that were not retested, which is higher numbers than are being cited in some of the other studies. But keep in mind, too, that we also know whether or not there was actually an opportunity to retest at some of those 41 visits, and that's going to be some of the basis of our targeted interventions after the fact. Codes that were most often associated with a specimen opportunity that was really an opportunity to either divide the urine or put an extra swab on the tray or put any swab on the tray for a chlamydia or a chlamydia test. Office visits are pretty nondescript. They were associated with them, but the most reliable ones for identifying truly good opportunities are those last two bars, or the last three bars. Because method procedure, if you're inserting an IUC, you know you're there. All you have to do is have the swab on the tray. STI treatment, this STI treatment excluded the injectable drugs and the kinds of drugs that you would be using to treat an STI. This one is really concerning. Did you do a vaginal swab for pH? Did you treat vaginal warts? If you are collecting something to evaluate BV or trichomonas, infection. That's what's in that STI treatment and diagnosis column. And then the other codes have to do largely with specimen collection that you're sending off to a lab. And the reason we separately identified them is because you have a lab slip in your hand and you didn't mark, or you did mark, that box to do a chlamydia test now that you're seeing the client. Some of our conclusions at this juncture, looking at just these 333, the VISIG algorithm worked for us. It correctly identified face-to-face clinician encounters that could be located for abstraction about 96% of the time. And I'm still looking at the data, but suspect that a significant number of those others that were missing charts had to do with logistical issues within a clinic, that if you were converting to electronic health records and had sent your paper records someplace into storage, you may or may not have been able to get everything back for us to be able to look at it. That will get reported later when we actually report our medical record review next year. This combination of the VISIG algorithm and registry match successfully identified a chlamydia-positive cohort for us that was of sufficient size with the records that we needed so that we could actually look at the questions and answer some of the questions we had. This was important to us because arrangements with laboratories to get positive results that have client identifiers on them is a little trickier for us, and this allows us to be able to access testing results and the service and women who have been served by the laboratories that we didn't have that kind of an arrangement with, because this is a statewide registry. And then, again, what I said earlier, claims do understate the specimen collection opportunities that we were able to identify in the 398 visits where we looked at that. And the content detail from the medical record review was able to confirm for us that the opportunity really did exist. So getting back to my original question, can we trust the claims to tell us what was done during a visit? I think so. Anyway, that's my contact information. And thank you if you've got any questions.